by his parents and relatives, and Antonia, her parents, and her relatives. How the next few minutes went would depend very much on Cecilia and how she behaved. He really had no clue what he was walking into. As Antonia approached the other guests, the group rearranged itself into several knots, leaving Cecilia Boyne, Lady Ennis, a blonde a few inches shorter than Antonia and considerably more plump, to turn and greet Antonia.
"Welcome, my dear."
Cecilia clasped Antonia's fingers, and the pair touch-scented cheeks.
"I'm so glad you managed to find a suitable escort and could join us. Thank you for being so understanding."
Retrieving her hand, Antonia gestured to Sebastian, who had halted at her shoulder.
"I'm not sure if you've met Irith, Lord Sebastian Sinster, Cecilia, Lady Ennis."
Cecilia's blue eyes lifted to meet Sebastian's, and she smiled.
"Indeed, we have met, although it was some years ago. Welcome to Pressingstoke Hall, my lord."
Sebastian took the hand Cecilia offered and half bowed. "It's a pleasure to be here, Lady Ennis." As he straightened, Cecilia bent a rather searching look on him, one that suggested she was wondering whether his appearance at her home meant anything beyond the obvious. Pretending obliviousness, he turned and scanned the other guests. Antonia had already drifted away to be greeted by her friends. Until he'd seen her and Cecilia together, it hadn't occurred to him that there was only a year or two between them. Cecilia seemed so much older. A long-established matron, she'd already presented her husband with the requisite two heirs before Sebastian had allowed her to entice him to her bed. Perhaps it was simply experience that made her seem so aged relative to the vivacious, vibrant, untouched passion he now saw whenever he looked at Antonia. Antonia, who was currently surrounded by young ladies, three of whom were throwing intrigued glances his way. He looked at the front door, confirming no more guests had arrived. On impulse, he turned to Cecilia.
"Are we the last?"
She scanned the heads, then nodded.
"I believe you are."
"In that case."
He wasn't sure inviting Cecilia's assistance in even a minor way was wise, but when it came to the other gentlemen present, he needed her insights rather than Antonia's.
"Perhaps you might introduce me to the gentleman. I don't see any I know."
Cecilia beamed and linked her arm with his.
"Of course."
He endured more than 10 minutes of her leaning a little too heavily on his arm, of her pressing a little too definitely against his side. But she did as he'd asked and introduced him to all the men there. Being the last to arrive was helpful. He was able to put all the men in context, who was a friend of whom. Ennis's younger brother, Conal Boyne, was about Sebastian's age, and had arrived from Ireland over a week ago. Sebastian was given to understand that Conal acted as his brother's agent on the Ennis estate outside Tulla. He was left to infer that Conal's presence in Kent was in relation to the management of said estate. There were three other bachelors present, all about 30 years old. A Mr. Henry Filbury, a Mr. Patrick Wilson, and a Mr. Baylor Worthington. Filbury and Wilson were Anglo-Irish, family friends of the Boynes, and particular friends of Connell's, while Worthington was an Englishman, a friend of Connell's who lived in London. Two old friends of Ennis's, a Mr. Samuel Parrish and a Mr. Harold McGibbon, were there with their wives. Both were of an age with Ennis, somewhere around 40 years old. The pair appeared to be well-to-do landowners and were Anglo-Irish. By way of a holiday designed to appease their wives, the foursome were making a tour of various spas in southern England. Ennis had invited them to stay as part of their holiday. Lord Ennis himself wasn't in the hall. Sebastian waited for Cecilia to mention her husband. Had something occurred to send Ennis running? Or he longed to ask Cecilia or one of the other men, but didn't wish in any way to signal that he had an interest in Ennis. Indeed, if any there knew of his affair with Cecilia, him asking after Ennis would be the last thing they would expect him to do. Eventually, Cecilia told him to make his bow to the older ladies, Mrs. Parrish and Mrs. McGibbon. Both were thoroughly delighted to make the acquaintance of an English marquis, who, moreover, was a duke's son. To Sebastian's relief, both ladies kept their avid curiosity in check, yet he still felt distinctly hounded, a sensation that only grew when Cecilia drew him across the hall to meet the younger ladies. Miss Melinda Boyne, a cousin of Ennis's, was a mousy young woman who had been invited to make up the numbers. She blushed furiously as she thanked Sebastian for coming, and thus giving her a chance to have a short holiday from Southampton, where she lived with her aging mother. Miss Amelie Billhurst was an English miss with bouncing golden curls. She was a cousin of Mrs. Parrish and was making the tour of the spas with the older couple. Sebastian suspected the Parrishes viewed Miss Billhurst as a fetcher and carrier, but she smiled a great deal and seemed genuinely delighted with her lot. Finally, Cecilia introduced him to Antonia's coterie of friends, the Honourable Miss Melissa Wainwright, the Honourable Miss Claire Savage, both daughters of Viscounts, and Mrs. Georgia Fanshawe, a somewhat dashing young matron who was transparently attached to her husband, the Honourable Hadley Fanshawe, grandson of the Earl of Titchworth. The latter greeted Sebastian with patent relief. Although he gave no sign of it, Sebastian was very aware of the assessing glances Miss Wainwright and Miss Savage directed his way. It seemed Antonia had established his role as unwelcome escort foisted upon her by her overprotective father only too well. Then Cecilia was called away to deal with some query from the housekeeper. As her arm slid from his and she moved away, he very nearly exhaled in relief. Cecilia had placed herself next to Antonia. Now she'd vacated the space, he shifted closer to his supposed charge. She threw him a quick glance, but said nothing, nor did she edge away.
"They're fussing about rooms," Miss Wainwright said. "I hope they sort things out soon. I'd like to unpack before tea."
"I just want a cup of tea," Georgia Fanshawe said. "We left London in our carriage before 6 this morning."
She turned an inquiring gaze on Antonia and Sebastian.
"How did you two get here?"
"Sebastian drove us down in his phaeton," Antonia replied. "It only took us just over 6 hours, so we left Green Street at the altogether decent hour of 8.
"Lucky you!"
Miss Savage smiled at Sebastian.
"I came up from the New Forest, so had to stop overnight with friends in Brighton."
"Just over 6 hours."
Hadley Fanshawe looked at Sebastian rather eagerly.
"That must mean you used your own horses."
Sebastian nodded. "I babied them along. We stopped at Faversham for lunch, so that gave them time to recover."
"What are they?" Hadley asked.
With a grin, Sebastian settled to discuss horseflesh with Hadley. Predictably, the ladies lost interest and started chattering about projected excursions and events with which they hoped to fill the following days. Eventually, the topic of carriage horses was exhausted, and Hadley was called to order via a question from his wife. Sebastian raised his head and scanned the company, but other than various staff, no one else had joined the gathering. Antonia noticed. She put a hand on Sebastian's arm. She'd intended purely to attract his attention, but the muscles under her fingers tensed to steel, and his head whipped around, and his gaze pinned her. Her heart leapt. Her pulse spiked. Pretending to be entirely unaware and unaffected, she coolly informed him.
If you're looking for Ennis, Cecilia said he was busy with unexpected estate matters and would join us later.
He stared at her for a second, then his chest rose as he drew in a breath, and he nodded and looked away. After a moment, she remembered and drew her hand from his sleeve. A second later, he asked,
Is there any event or entertainment scheduled for today?
She resisted the impulse to blink in surprise.
Was his naturally deep voice a touch deeper, rougher?
No, nothing tonight. Just tea at 4 o'clock, and then dinner at 8.
Drawing room at 7?
She nodded.
The usual.
She'd had plenty of time during the journey into Kent to confirm that her sudden susceptibility to him hadn't faded, and subsequently, to decide how best to cope with, and to hide, her unexpected sensitivity. But if the way he tensed, and the sheer potency of the look he'd bent on her when she'd entirely innocently laid her hand on his arm was any guide, she wasn't the only one battling a newfound susceptibility. That she hadn't factored into her deliberations at all. Indeed, that such a situation might exist had never entered her head. She needed to rethink, rather desperately, about him and her. But that required time alone, away from him. Yet she remained determined to participate in his mission and contribute to the outcome as and when she could. She'd wondered if, as soon as he was through the front door, he would quit her side. Playing the role of escort at a country house party didn't require him to loom at her shoulder every minute of every day. Yet he'd gravitated back to stand beside her, and even when he might have drifted away, had shown no inclination to do so. She was in two minds about that. While he was by her side, she could keep abreast of what he was doing vis-à-vis his mission. But if he was by her side, she tensed and remained in a hypersensitive state, in which her nerves seemed so taut they quivered, just waiting for a touch, a look, an expression to set them twanging. That seemed to have become her new default state when he was near. Everyone! They all looked toward the staircase. Cecilia was standing 2 steps up, with various footmen and maids behind her, and the round figure of the matronly housekeeper beside her. We have your rooms prepared. If the ladies would like to come forward, we'll have you comfortably settled in good time before tea. 4 o'clock, everyone, in the drawing room, which, Cecilia pointed to her left, is over there. She looked down and smiled. Mrs. Parrish, we put you just along the west wing, with Miss Billhurst on one side and Mr. Parrish on the other. Antonia fell in behind the Fanshawes. Somewhat to her surprise, Sebastian maintained his position beside her. They chatted to Hadley and Georgia about the amenities Cecilia had mentioned could be found in the grounds, as others were sent upstairs to their rooms, and the 4 of them edged closer to the bottom of the stairs. Finally, Georgia faced Cecilia. Cecilia smiled on their group. As it happens, you're all in the east wing, the 3 rooms on the eastern side. Your windows look out on the shrubbery and wilderness and over the woods. Cecilia consulted her list. Antonia, you have the room closest to the gallery, with the Fanshawes next door along. Cecilia paused to allow the housekeeper to organise a footman to lead Georgia and Hadley to their room. Then Cecilia turned and looked directly at Sebastian. Antonia nearly blinked. The quality of that look. She felt decidedly de trop. Given you are Antonia's escort, Cecilia was saying to Sebastian, her tone husky, I've placed you in the same wing, 2 doors down, beyond the Fanshawes. The housekeeper faced Antonia and bobbed a curtsy.
If you'll follow me, my lady, I'll show you to your room. Your maid's already there unpacking your things. Thank you.
Antonia raised her skirts, and without looking at Sebastian or Cecilia, what was going on there, she started to follow the housekeeper up the stairs. She'd taken only one step when Sebastian's long fingers closed like a vice about her elbow.
As my room is two doors from yours, I'll see you to your door.
Seared by his touch, and equally surprised by his hard tone, she glanced back. His face was set in uncompromising lines. She also saw the hand Cecilia reached out to him that he adroitly sidestepped, leaving Cecilia to turn the surreptitious attempt at a caress into a vague gesture. Facing forward, Antonia continued up the stairs. Sebastian's grip eased, then his fingers fell away. She gave no sign she'd noticed anything, but once they'd reached the gallery, temporarily deserted, she slowed until the housekeeper was sufficiently far ahead, then halted and looked at Sebastian.
What's between you and Cecilia?
She'd have to be a ninny hammer to have missed the implication. He halted close beside her, but he'd been looking over the gallery balustrade at Cecilia below. Antonia resisted the impulse to fold her arms and tap her toe and simply waited. Eventually, his lips twisted in a faint grimace.
We had an affair 6 years ago. I broke it off. I've barely seen her since.
Antonia blew out a breath. She was rather surprised he'd told her so directly.
Well, that's not going to make your mission any easier.
Then she realized and frowned.
I assume Drake knew. He always knows everything. So why?
She raised her gaze to Sebastian's face in time to see a rueful smile tug at his lips.
Believe it or not, he murmured. Drake considered it an advantage.
He met her eyes.
He didn't want to write my name to Ennis, to identify me as his surrogate, but the connection, which Ennis knows of, allowed Drake to describe me as the man Ennis would least want to see.
Antonia made a rude sound. She turned and walked on to where the housekeeper stood, not so patiently waiting at the archway leading to the east wing.
I've noticed that Drake has a warped sense of humour.
Sebastian said nothing, just followed her to her room. As she passed through the door Mrs. Blanchard had opened, Antonia heard him confirming with the housekeeper that the room he'd been assigned was actually four doors down the wing, there being two dressing rooms in between. Antonia shut the door and discovered a smile was teasing her lips. Becky, her maid, who'd been born on the Rawlings family estate at Lambourne and had been Antonia's maid since Antonia had left the schoolroom, came to bob a curtsy.
Do you want to change for tea, m'lady? Or will it be just a wash?
Antonia handed Becky the bonnet she'd been carrying by its ribbons.
Just a wash, and I want to redo my hair. I'll wear the grey watered silk for dinner. I'll lay it out while you're downstairs.
Becky followed Antonia to the dressing table. After Antonia sat, Becky started to pull pins from her heavy hair.
Nice place?
Antonia asked.
Fair enough,
Becky replied.
They're friendly, and everything seems to be run as it should be. More than one iron, and that's a blessing.
Antonia smiled. Becky unravelled her long hair, then plied the brush. Antonia closed her eyes, soothed by the regular tugs on her scalp. She wasn't, she decided, going to worry about Sebastian. Not until she had some better idea of what this odd awareness that had sprung up between them then presaged. There was nothing gentle about it. Her senses responded, as if to a spark landing on her skin. The effect was far more marked, far more intense, than anything she'd ever felt with any other man. Of course, she knew what such sparks normally meant. But this was Sebastian. He was almost like a brother. Only she'd never seen him in such a light. Never. Not ever. He'd always simply been him, in a class of his own, at least in her eyes. What his particular class was, that was what she now needed to decide. Then another thought impinged. He was pretending to be her escort, supposedly there to protect her, to defend her virtue. Yet when Cecilia had approached him, he'd seized her arm, as if, in reality, she was protecting him. Her eyes still closed. Antonia grinned. In the room four doors down, Sebastian shrugged out of his coat and handed it to Wilkins. A dapper individual, plain of face and self-effacing in manner, Wilkins was a godsend in many ways. Other servants found him far more approachable than they expected a Marquis's man to be. And so they talked, usually more freely than they otherwise would.
"I've laid out a clean shirt, my lord. I gather the second gong will be rung at 7, with dinner at 8.
Sebastian started to undo the links closing his cuffs.
"So I heard. See what you can learn about the Anglo-Irish contingent."
He glanced at Wilkins.
"Have they all brought manservants?"
"Most."
Wilkins lovingly brushed the dust from Sebastian's coat.
"Mr. Filbury and Mr. Wilson are making do with one of the footmen, and Mr. Connell Boyne is sharing the services of his brother's man, which is causing something of a strain, as, apparently, Lord Ennis is very particular about his dress."
Sebastian grimaced.
"In that case, concentrate on Parrish and Mick Gibbon, and you may as well see what you can learn about Mr. Worthington as well."
"Indeed, my lord. I will endeavour."
As he stripped off his shirt and reached for the fresh one Wilkins had laid on the bed, Sebastian found his mind wandering, not to the Anglo-Irish, not to what he might, if he put his mind to it, learn from Cecilia Boyne, but to the tantalizing conundrum of the lady in the room, four doors up the wing. Sebastian walked into the drawing room at 4:10. He was pleased to note that all the other guests were already there, most standing or sitting in groups, holding cups of tea and sipping while they chatted. His gaze came to rest on Antonia's dark head. She was standing before the windows with Miss Wainwright and Miss Boyne. He accepted a cup and saucer from a little maid, who popped up beside him, and before anyone could accost him, strolled across the room to Antonia's side. A cool glance as he halted beside her was all the reaction she evinced. He sipped and pretended to listen to Miss Boyne's assertion that there was little by way of society around about while he planned his next move. When Miss Billhurst joined them, distracting Miss Wainwright and Miss Boyne, he leaned closer to Antonia, dipped his head and whispered,
"I need to talk with Ennis's friends, the Parrishes and Mick Gibbons. Can you..."
With one hand, he gestured. She turned her head and met his eyes.
"Can I ease your way?"
He nearly got trapped in the silvery grey of her eyes, but managed to nod. She considered him for a second, then reached out and placed her hand on his sleeve. This time, he'd anticipated the move, and managed to, largely, suppress his instinctive reaction. She gripped lightly and nudged, steering him back. Over her shoulder, she told the other three ladies,
"We'll catch up with you later."
Facing forward, she settled her hand on his arm. With an imperious look, she summoned a hovering footman to relieve her of her empty cup. Sebastian handed over his as well. Before they moved on, they were in the centre of the room and out of earshot of the others. He asked,
"Has Ennis put in an appearance yet?"
"No. Apparently he's still closeted in his study." He frowned.
"I wonder if he's hiding."
Cecilia assured us he would join us for dinner.
After a moment, Antonia asked,
"Why do you want to talk to the Parrishes and McGibbons?"
Drake realized there would be Anglo-Irish gentlemen here. But I don't think he realized that fully half the guests, the majority of the men, would hail from Ireland.
Antonia met his gaze.
"Ennis is Anglo-Irish, and the Anglo-Irish always stick together."
"You know that, I know that, and I'm sure Drake knows that too. But I don't think it occurred to him that so many Anglo-Irish would be here."
"You mean that some of those here, attending the house party, might be connected with whatever urgent message Ennis wants to convey to Drake?"
"Exactly. And as Ennis appears to be avoiding his guests..."
After a second, she asked,
"Does Drake have any idea what Ennis's message is about?"
"No, he had no clue at all."
"So the message might not, in fact, have anything to do with Ireland or the Irish?"
He grimaced.
"Logically, no."
"But you think it has?"
"I think, and Drake thinks, that rumours about fresh plots coming out of Ireland at the same time that Ennis contacts Drake, wanting to impart information of a secret and sensitive nature, is too difficult to swallow as mere coincidence, especially given Ennis is an Anglo-Irish peer with an active estate in Ireland, but a preference for living in England, who is married to an English peer's daughter and has his sons being brought up as Englishmen."
Antonia turned to survey the guests. She had to admit, Englishmen were in short supply. After a moment she murmured,
"We, you and I, are so obviously English, and upper nobility at that. Even if the Anglo-Irish here are discussing such a plot, they're not going to mention it in our hearing."
"No, we'll have to eavesdrop, and even then, it's unlikely they'll let anything fall. But I was thinking more in terms of learning who they are, where they hail from, and so on. I can't see any reason they won't tell us that, and if any of them prove to be involved in whatever plot is being hatched, the more information we have, the better."
"All right."
She tightened her grip on his arm.
"Follow my lead."
She guided him to where Mrs. McGibbon and Mr. Parrish were now chatting with Melinda Boyne. Antonia and Sebastian were greeted with interest. It wasn't all that hard to get Mr. Parrish talking about his interests in Ireland, sheep and investments, in that order. When appealed to, Mrs. McGibbon revealed that her husband owned a property in the northwest of the country and augmented his income through underwriting the activities of an increasingly lucrative fishing fleet. Between them, by subtle degrees, Antonia and Sebastian steered the conversation to comparisons with the Boynes' Irish estate near Tulla, as Mrs. McGibbon, Mr. Parrish, and Miss Boyne had all visited and were familiar with the place. That was a subject on which all three had insights to offer. Insights, but no startling revelations. Yet it was a start. Tea having been consumed, and the cups and saucers surrendered, with the first gong not due to be rung until 6 o'clock, the company started to drift apart. As in small groups, the guests elected to stroll in the waning light of the mild autumn afternoon. Some made for the terrace, others for the gardens. Antonia and Sebastian were joined by Melissa Wainwright and Claire Savage. Together with Miss Boyne and Miss Billhurst, Antonia's friends were eager to take the path around the ornamental lake to the small folly on the far shore. Sebastian held aloof from their plans. Antonia assumed he was intending to join and attempt to extract information from the other unattached gentleman. Then Cecilia Boyne swept up and halted by Sebastian's side. She listened to Amelie Billhurst's eager outline of their plan and smiled encouragingly.
It is a lovely walk at this time of evening, ladies. I'm sure you'll enjoy it.
With that, Cecilia looked at Sebastian, then boldly slid her arm through his.
But I'm sure Lord Irith would prefer to stroll the terrace.
To Sebastian she said,
Perhaps I might show you my new conservatory, my lord.
Antonia didn't think, didn't blink, with an accomplished smile, one she'd learned at her mother's knee and perfected by observation. She leaned forward and around Sebastian, addressed their hostess.
Oh, but Irith has already agreed to accompany us, and all the other gentlemen have gone off to play billiards, I believe.
She turned her smile on Sebastian and allowed the gesture to take on a quite different, more lover-like warmth.
I know how you feel about me wandering unprotected.
Sebastian seized her lifeline like a drowning man. He turned to Cecilia.
Sadly, Cecilia, as you can see, I'm already committed.
Cecilia shot Antonia a look that was more puzzled than anything else. She eased her arm from Sebastian's, then patted his sleeve.
Later, then.
Putting on her hostessly face, she smiled at the other ladies.
Enjoy yourselves, my dears.
Cecilia turned and headed toward Mrs. Parrish and Mrs. McGibbon. Resuming their artless chatter, Miss Boyne and Miss Billhurst led the way through the open French doors and onto the terrace. Melissa and Claire followed. Sebastian drew in a breath and offered Antonia his arm. She laid her hand on his sleeve, and they fell in at the rear of the small procession. Once they were pacing down the lawn toward the lake, he murmured,
Thank you. Clearly, avoiding Cecilia while pursuing her husband is going to be a trifle more complicated than Drake thought.
Antonia made a non-committal sound. They walked on in silence, for which she was grateful. She was still coming to terms with the implications of what she'd just done. Sebastian clearly assumed her action had been prompted by an urge to help him with the mission. She knew otherwise. Cecilia's proprietary assumption had sparked a reaction in Antonia, unlike anything she'd ever felt before. Sheer possessiveness had erupted and gripped her. She'd seen her mother react in just such a way toward ladies who presumed to approach her father, thinking to lure him into an affair. Her father found such clashes amusing. He was prone to stand back and watch with an indulgent smile on his lips. He understood what lay behind her mother's steely rebuffs. Sebastian didn't possess such insight, an insight born of experience. Thank God. Her head high, her gaze fixed forward, Antonia paced alongside him, her hand resting lightly on his sleeve, gripping only a little. That was all she would allow herself. Beneath her outwardly composed exterior, she was metaphorically taking in great gulps of air and trying to calm the whirlpool of swirling emotions inside her. She'd wondered what Sebastian meant to her, how the passionate, fiery woman who lived inside her truly saw him. Now she knew. That woman, who was her true self, saw Lord Sebastian Sinster, Marquis of Irith, as quite simply hers. Chapter 3 Sebastian walked into the drawing room just after the clocks had chimed 7 o'clock. The first man he saw, standing before the fireplace and chatting with McGibbon and Parrish, was Lord Ennis. About 40 years old, Ennis was shorter and stockier than Sebastian, and his black hair, gleaming under the gaslight, clustered in thick curls about his pale face. Unhurriedly, Sebastian crossed the room to the group before the hearth, transparently intent on exchanging greetings with his host, as any guest would. McGibbon and Parrish welcomed him with smiles, but Ennis had stiffened fractionally when he saw Sebastian approaching, and his expression had grown distant and a touch chilly. His own expression easy and relaxed, after nodding to the other two, Sebastian politely inclined his head to Ennis and offered his hand.
"My lord, it's a pleasure to have the opportunity of visiting Pressingstoke Hall."
Ennis briefly gripped his hand.
"Irith, Lady Ennis mentioned that you would be here. I hope you find your stay entertaining."
The words were stiff and stilted, contrasting sharply with Sebastian's assured drawl. It was clear Ennis wanted nothing to do with Sebastian, but he'd expected that. And with McGibbon and Parrish hovering, now was not the time to mention a private meeting.
"Actually."
Turning, Sebastian scanned the guests.
"Given I'm here as a favour to the Chillingworths, I expect my appreciation of my stay will largely depend on Lady Antonia."
"Indeed." Ennis's rejoinder was clipped. Sebastian barely registered it. He'd located Antonia's glossy dark head and discovered that she, and Miss Wainwright and Miss Savage, were surrounded by Connell Boyne, Filbury, Wilson, and Worthington. The four gentlemen were patently putting themselves out to please, although none of the ladies as yet seemed won over. Worthington laughed and edged closer to Antonia, leaning near as if to whisper something in her ear. Antonia shifted, easing back. The impulse to march across and insert himself between Antonia and Worthington was powerful enough to make Sebastian sway. He wasn't going to accomplish anything with Ennis at the moment, and if he wanted to keep up the facade of being Antonia's escort, adopting a world-weary air, Sebastian turned to Ennis, McGibbon, and Parrish.
"If you'll excuse me, gentlemen, I believe my role of escort demands my presence elsewhere."
McGibbon and Parrish were amused. Ennis was relieved. They parted with nods, his gaze fixing on the group gathered before the long windows overlooking the terrace. Sebastian strolled nonchalantly past the other guests to fetch up beside Antonia. She saw him coming and readily shifted to make way for him. He sensed with some relief. Worthington looked somewhat taken aback to find Sebastian suddenly beside him, but soldiered gamely on with the story he was telling. In less than a minute, Sebastian realized that the only threat Worthington posed was that of boring his listeners to madness. But his three friends, Filbury, Wilson, and Connell Boyne, were of a quite different stripe. All three struck Sebastian as minor jackals, gentlemen scavengers on the lookout for a fortune to make their own. They didn't rank among the more dangerous of the breed, but all three had enough nous to realize that, of the unmarried ladies at Pressingstoke Hall, Antonia was the juiciest plum. While Worthington rattled on, apparently oblivious to the implications of Sebastian's sudden appearance, the other three eyed him assessingly. Sebastian stood beside Antonia, and one by one met Filbury's, then Wilson's, then Boyne's eyes. He didn't actually do anything, just let his threat infuse his gaze, his stance, the very air between them. All three got his message, loud and clear. They dropped their gazes, and a certain tension, the intentness of hunters assessing prey, that had tightened the atmosphere, evaporated. Antonia exchanged resigned looks with Melissa and Claire. On her part, those looks were also placating. She'd insisted to her friends that Sebastian was merely a family friend, sent to fill the role of escort, that he was nothing more to her and she was nothing more to him. That was what she'd believed at the time. But she and her friends were more than experienced enough to recognize precisely what he had just done. And such heavy-handed intervention didn't fit the script he was supposed to be following. But her friend's confusion was the least of the problems plaguing her. The manner in which Sebastian had done what he'd done had set warning bells ringing in her brain. He'd acted with arrogant, invincible authority, with an air of absolute, inalienable right. She knew him, knew men like him. She knew the difference between an escort stepping in to protect his charge and the aura Sebastian had projected, which had been several orders of magnitude more extreme. There was no way any of the three other gentlemen would approach her now, other than in the most innocent of contexts. Not that she wanted them to approach her in any non-innocent circumstances, but still. In just a few short minutes, without uttering a single word, Sebastian had declared that she was his. His, in some way, in whatever way he meant. He'd behaved as if he owned her, as if she, her time, her consideration, were his by right. Given her own eye-opening revelation of mere hours before, a revelation from which she was still mentally reeling, him behaving in such a possessive way was only compounding her difficulties. Apparently satisfied with the result he'd achieved, his expression once more politely mild, he glanced down at her. She caught his eye, narrowed hers fractionally, and with a deceptively sweet smile curving her lips, looped her arm in his and murmured, "Walk with me." She directed her smile around the circle. "If you'll excuse us?" It wasn't a question. Melissa and Claire inclined their heads with clear relief. They didn't want Sebastian destroying all their fun. The other gentleman brightened and replied, "Of course," and "Until later." Maintaining an expression of unimpaired calm, Antonia steered Sebastian toward an unoccupied corner of the room. He didn't resist. From the look in his eyes, he assumed she had something to impart regarding the mission. Doing her best not to grit her teeth, could his obliviousness over what he'd just done be any more obvious? She halted, and seized the moment of him turning to face her and her drawing her arm from his to jab a finger into his side. That got his undivided attention. She glared into his eyes. "Behave." His pale green eyes searched hers, even as his brows lowered, and bafflement overwhelmed his arrogance. What? He truly had no idea. She resisted the urge to wave her arms. "You can't just go around." She gave in and waved one hand. "Intimidating people." His features set in intimidating lines. "Why not?" "Because we're here, supposedly, to enjoy ourselves as a group."
"But they were..."
"Behaving exactly as anyone would expect." She couldn't put her hands on her hips. "You appear to have forgotten that I, and Melissa and Claire, are 29. We knew perfectly well what those three, indeed even Mr. Worthington, teddy bear though he is, were thinking. For all of their belief in their own sophistication, they are boringly predictable, and nothing we haven't dealt with before. But they can be entertaining. If you're imagining we're three innocent misses who require a nursemaid, you are a long way off the mark."
"I'm hardly a nursemaid."
He stared frowningly down at her for several seconds. She glared belligerently back. Eventually, he grated,
"So what am I supposed to do? Just let those jackals sniff about your skirts?"
"Unless I signal otherwise, yes." Sebastian's jaw clenched even more tightly. He wasn't sure he could do as she asked. Just the thought set his hackles rising. But her eyes were flashing more silver than grey, and she appeared very set on him backing off. He consulted his inner self, and inwardly acknowledged that him backing off wasn't going to happen. But he had to say something to appease her. He forced himself to nod, an exceedingly small nod. Very well. We'll see how matters progress. She wasn't convinced she'd got what she wanted. She searched his face. Then she appeared to accept she'd done enough for the moment. The passion left her eyes to be replaced with her usual cool hauteur. She shifted to his side and turned to view the gathering.
Have you spoken with Ennis yet?
Only to greet him. He's surrounded by others, and this is hardly an appropriate venue. He studied their host, still standing before the fireplace. I'll need to watch and seize a moment to make it clear that I'm Drake's surrogate, that he and I will need to meet privately, and I assume he'll want to keep that meeting secret.
Well, we've a few minutes yet before dinner will be announced. She slipped her hand into the crook of his arm. Come with me, and let's see if I can engineer your moment.
He let her guide him to the group about Ennis, but although they joined it, there were too many others in the company, likewise intent on spending a few moments with their host. Despite Antonia's best efforts, no opportunity arose for Sebastian to exchange even a few private words with Ennis. Blanchard appeared and announced that dinner was served. Courtesy of their ranks, Sebastian and Antonia were separated by the full length of the table. As the highest-ranking lady, she was seated on Ennis's right, while Sebastian, as the highest-ranking male, led Cecilia into dinner and sat at her right. As course followed course, Sebastian found his frustration mounting. Not only had he yet to speak with Ennis, but he also had to sit and watch Antonia being made much of by the gentleman at the other end of the table, while simultaneously keeping his wits about him sufficiently to avoid Cecilia's lures. Despite all evidence that he was uninterested in reanimating an affair long dead, she continued to eye him with open speculation, as if she remained hopeful that his escorting Antonia was merely a convenient excuse he'd seized in order to return to her, Cecilia's, orbit. Sebastian was quite sure that, despite his usual perspicacity, Drake hadn't foreseen the mounting complications evolving from what Drake had considered a fortuitous set of circumstances. Not only was Sebastian juggling the mission itself, but he also had to contend with Ennis's understandable reluctance to have anything to do with him, with an unexpected company of Anglo-Irish all around, plus his increasingly unsettling and potentially highly charged interactions with Antonia. And on top of it all, he needed to douse Cecilia's increasingly transparent expectations. Very much aware that Ennis was directing occasional dark looks down the table at him, Sebastian made every effort to keep the conversation general and otherwise direct his attention to Mrs. Parrish, seated on his right. While at the dinner table, he could do nothing about his mission or about Antonia, so he devoted his energies to avoiding Cecilia and ignoring her thankfully subtle encouragements. Nevertheless, he'd rarely been so grateful to see the end of a meal. After Cecilia rose and led the ladies back to the drawing room, the gentlemen moved up the table, and the decanters were passed around. There was no chance whatsoever of speaking privately with Ennis. Rather than further aggravate the man, Sebastian kept his distance. He sat beside Hadley Fanshawe and talked of horses and the latest fads in carriages. They were joined by Worthington and McGibbon, and the interlude passed in companionable bonhomie. Sebastian perked up when, by general consensus, the men decided not to join the ladies, but instead to retreat to the billiards room. But he was destined for disappointment, as even Parrish and McGibbon elected to eschew the ladies' company and crowd into the billiards room. There was no chance to approach Ennis, even to simply drop a quiet word in his ear. It was increasingly obvious that any such word would have to be exchanged in relative privacy, at the very least, in a situation where Sebastian could overcome Ennis's unwillingness to interact with him, without alerting anyone else to the exchange being in any way notable. Sebastian played two rounds of billiards, one with Hadley, Wilson and Filbury, the other with Connell Boyne, Worthington and Parrish, who, despite his age and girth, proved a dab hand at the game. Ennis didn't play, but circulated among his guests, stopping here and there to chat and replenish the glasses of brandy or whisky most held. Ennis gave Sebastian a wide berth, but not so obviously that any but Sebastian would notice. Stepping back from the table and ostensibly chalking his cue while he waited for Parrish to line up his shot, Sebastian surreptitiously studied Ennis. He took in the way Ennis moved around the room, the quality of his actions, his stride, listened to his rather forced laugh. Ennis was nervous, anxious. The longer Sebastian watched, the more he was sure of it. Ennis had been hiding earlier. He'd wanted to limit the time he spent with his guests. And now Ennis was watching certain of those guests closely. All the Anglo-Irish men, and also Worthington. Damn. His lips compressing, Sebastian looked away. Drake had been too clever. Ennis had misinterpreted Drake's message. If Ennis's thoughts were fixated on an Irish plot, then the man Ennis would least want to see wasn't Sebastian, but someone Ennis thought was connected with whatever plot he had word of and was presumably planning to betray. Ennis would never like Sebastian, but he wouldn't care that much about a long-ago affair. But Ennis cared, deeply, about whatever was going on, or he would never have contacted Drake. Ennis thought Drake's messenger was one of his Anglo-Irish compatriots. He thought Drake had a man buried in the group, and given Drake's reputation, that wasn't any great stretch of the imagination. So Ennis was waiting for that man to give him a sign. But Drake didn't have a contact among this lot. He'd sent Sebastian instead. Sebastian felt like hanging his head. In the next instant, he was visited by an urge to put down his cue, march across, and put Ennis out of his misery by simply telling him that he, Sebastian, was Drake's surrogate. But if Ennis was nervous, presumably he had reason to be, presumably at least one of the men there, and more likely more than one, might, at least in Ennis's eyes, have some connection to the plot. Or was Ennis's nervousness due to something else entirely? Sebastian finished the game, playing largely by rote. He'd been playing billiards since he was tall enough to see over the table. He smiled, laughed, and accepted the congratulations of the others, then handed his cue to the next would-be player. He glanced around, but Ennis was still circulating. As host, he was unlikely to retire until at least Parrish and McGibbon did, and neither looked ready to call it a night. Even when they did, Ennis would still avoid Sebastian. And even if he didn't retire with his friends, but remained, too many others would still be present for Sebastian to force a confrontation.
"I'm for bed."
Hadley Fanshawe halted beside Sebastian.
"We have another 4 days and nights in which to knock balls around."
Sebastian nodded.
"I'll go up with you."
They called a general farewell, and left the others still playing and talking. As Sebastian and Hadley climbed the stairs, Sebastian asked,
"Have you heard anything of the plans for tomorrow?"
"No, but I'm sure Georgia will know. It always seems it's the ladies who make the plans at this sort of thing."
"Speaking of the ladies..."
Sebastian glanced back at the front hall and the now open door of the drawing room.
"It appears they've already retired."
"Ah, well, no excitement for them, given we all hid in the billiards room."
Hadley grinned. The clock struck 12 as they reached the gallery. Sebastian walked with Hadley into the corridor running down the east wing. Hadley halted at his door, and they exchanged quiet good nights. Then Sebastian ambled on to his room. He opened the door and walked in. One step, and his gaze fixed on the shadowy figure sitting on his bed. And he froze. Lust roared through him, powerful enough, violent enough to rock him. He clamped his fingers on the doorknob, gripping hard as he fought to regain his mental feet, to keep his expression utterly closed, and not allow any of his searing desire to seep through. He finally managed to draw in a tight, too shallow breath. Draped in shadows, she sat on the far side of the bed and watched him. But she made no move, made no sound, almost as if she understood the unwisdom of even shifting. Carefully, he eased his fingers from the doorknob. He forced himself to draw in another breath, step fully inside, and shut the door. Slowly, he turned and faced her. Antonia. His first impulse was to trap the surging compulsions and feelings and push them deep, lock them away. Deny them. But even as his gaze passed over her veiled features, he accepted that this, all he felt, all she made him feel, was real. He'd seen her anew, or perhaps for the first time, in Green Street 3 days ago. The sight had riveted his mind and his senses. Now, unexpectedly finding her in such a place had provoked another level of recognition. Through the dimness, he looked at her and realized, knew who, exactly, he was looking at. The exceedingly beautiful, haughty and aloof, elusive and willful, noble-born, socially adept daughter of an earl, who was no blood relation. His senses, he realized, had always known. Some part of his mind had too. But for decades, most of his conscious mind had relegated her to the status of an almost sister. He didn't truly think of her as a sister, and he never would attempt to again. He took a step forward, only to realize just how giddy the abrupt, unanticipated revelation had left him. Such a fundamental rearrangement of the landscape of his life. Perhaps it was unsurprising that he felt a touch disoriented. Distantly, he heard the sound of men's voices, of footsteps and doors closing. The movement in the corridors had masked, excused his hesitation. As the sounds faded, he drew breath and, still moving slowly, carefully, walked to the tall boy, which stood a window width from the foot of the bed. No way would he trust himself anywhere near that bed. Not until he'd had time to study his new landscape and decide on his best way forward. Ravishing her tonight almost certainly wasn't it. To account for his direction, he drew out his watch and chain, detached the latter, and set them and his purse on the top of the tall boy. She finally broke the silence.
"Did you succeed in speaking with Ennis?"
She kept her voice low, the husky tones feathered across his senses.
"No."
He turned. Leaning against the tall boy, he shoved his hands in his pockets and faced her. and ruthlessly refocused his mind on his mission.
He's avoiding me. Hardly surprising, but it's not only that. He's distracted. I think he's looking for Drake's man among his Anglo-Irish friends.
Antonia pulled a face.
I had wondered if Drake's peculiar message might backfire.
She was stunned to hear how calm and collected she sounded. Inside, she felt as if she was teetering on the edge of some dangerously high precipice, her nerves taut as a bowstring, one twist away from snapping. Her lungs felt locked. She was so tense, she thought she might be quivering. She kept her eyes locked on Sebastian's shadowy figure. The curtains on the window between them had been left open, and faint moonlight streamed in, strong enough to see shapes, but not to make out expressions. But he stood outside the shaft of light, and she sat outside it as well. That left them searching with and relying on their other senses as much as, if not more than, their eyes. In the instant he'd walked in, and his gaze had fallen on her, she'd felt a jerk of awareness, a visceral tug unlike anything she'd ever experienced. Some part of her mind was still reeling from that. The rest of it understood all too well that, entirely unwittingly, she'd placed herself in a predator's lair, on his bed. She'd always known, instinctively had known, what manner of man he was. Although she'd never seen him like this, with his shields, the sophisticated and highly polished surface he displayed to their world, down, she'd always sensed the reality of him, the ineluctable masculine threat he posed, powerful, virile, and compelling. She hadn't intended to provoke him, but the single heavy armchair in the room had its back to the door, and she hadn't felt comfortable sitting there. As she watched, Sebastian pushed away from the tall boy, slowly, with a gait that could only be described as a stalking prowl. He closed the distance between them. His voice seemed impossibly low as he murmured, "I'll catch him tomorrow." She nearly asked, "Who?" then realized he meant Ennis. He passed through, then beyond the fall of moonlight, and became a large, dark figure, steadily, step by step, looming nearer. She'd forgotten how to breathe. A tiny, very small and craven part of her wanted to flee. The rest waited, breath bated, needing, quite desperately, to see what he would do. He halted a bare foot away, and she discovered her mouth had gone dry. She looked up at the pale oval of his face, and knew beyond question that something fundamental between them had changed, literally, in the blink of an eye, and they would never go back to the way they'd been. A shiver, one of sheer reckless anticipation, slithered down her spine. The atmosphere felt so charged. She was surprised she saw no sparks. Then he raised one hand, slowly, to her.